Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen. I'm joined today by Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell and our Corridor news readers Chloe Weinstein, Simone Otley, and Jaya Francis. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie about the Kingston City Council's decision to delay increasing its greenhouse gas emissions reductions target.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. At their last meeting, Council was presented with the opportunity to determine whether they would increase the reduction target for corporate greenhouse gas emissions. The choice before Council was to make the jump from 30% by 2030 to 40 to 50% by 2030, or delay the decision until 2025. The option to push the decision to 2025 was proposed to give staff an opportunity to gather more information and evaluate the feasibility of the goal, as many studies are underway to determine the best courses of action.
I think I certainly speak for myself when I look at, you know, not being able to breathe the air in June and July and being terrified at how our climate is changing and not being able to take my kids tobogganing at all in December. It isn't, I think, lost on any of us that we're in a climate emergency and Kingston has to be a leader. But we need to know what we're getting into. I hate it when other levels of government say we're going to meet these targets and they have no plan to get there. We need to know how we're going to get there, and that's what we're endorsing tonight. The steps, the costs, it's transparent with the community of what we're going to do to achieve our carbon targets. I want Kingston to achieve this, and I can certainly speak for myself. I've been an advocate across all sectors. We're 2% of all emissions in Kingston. The other 98% of people, our industrial sector, people who own houses, have to get on board as well. So I appreciate everybody who's come out tonight. Take this message home. Talk to your MP, talk to your MPPs, talk to your neighbors, and get them on board. Change your patterns of driving, on consuming, and get everybody on board. We're one slice of the pie. We all are in this together.
And I know that a goal of 50% by 2030 would hold the city accountable as a corporation, but it wouldn't hold anyone else. So while it would be symbolic and important, and I would love to get there, I think we need to still look at that other 98%. And it's really important, too, that waiting for these studies, and to be clear, we all want them yesterday, but here we are. It's okay. They're coming. But so waiting for these studies, though, isn't going to deter from what city staff are already working on. They're not going to stop. They're not going to slow down.
Many delegations stood before Council to urge them to increase the target, offering various suggestions for ways to progress towards a more ambitious target, and presenting the 50 by 2023 petition, with 770 signatures so far.
No one group or organization can fix it all, but we all have to do our part. Realistically, to avoid catastrophic outcomes, that means 50 by 2030.
We cannot talk only about feasibility and costs associated with increasing greenhouse gas emissions goals and targets, but we also have to talk about the cost of not doing enough. The International Panel on Climate Change calls for a 50% reduction of greenhouse gas emissions by 2030 in developed countries. This is what we need to achieve. We recognize that the City of Kingston has done a lot, and we need to build on that. We recognize that provincial policies act as a barrier to local initiatives, and we urge you to continue to pressure the provincial government, and we wish to contribute to these efforts. So let us know how we can work with you.
Oh, people say, we're only a small entity in this. What do we matter? I would say we matter plenty, not only because any action taken by local jurisdictions like ours will help to combat this crisis, but because we'll set an example for citizens and other municipalities to do likewise. It's cumulative. Just think of it. One city or town after another, then one province after another, then one country after another. That's how we'll get there, with meaningful action. And one such action Kingston can take is to increase its emissions reduction goal from 30% by the year 2030, based on 2018 levels, to 50%. We are confident we can do it.
I fundamentally believe it is each generation's job to leave the Earth and our communities better than we found it. And this motion to increase the corporate emission target to 50% reduction by 2030 is a key way I believe we can do this. This is the next step of Kingston maintaining its progressive climate action standing and continuing to attract members of my generation and future generations that our city, our councillors, and mayor are actively working towards protecting a livable future.
At the end of discussions, councillors chose to go forward with the delay, awaiting the results of staff's investigations into the topic to make more informed decisions.
Basically, it's safe to say that getting these reports is really going to allow us to target locally where we're going to get the biggest bang for our buck, because we've got a certain amount of resources that we're going to be able to put forward to this. So rather than right now saying, yep, we're just going to go for it without any clue on how we're getting there, we could be wasting resources. And so, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, and certainly you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what this says to me, that if we, for example, committed $1 million today to do this, we wouldn't necessarily know where's the best place to spend it, and we may waste some of that getting a small reduction, whereas if we wait and we get the information we need, we can make a big step forward. And yes, I hear the chuckles, I hear all the rest of it, but any time that you advance something without knowing how you're going to get there, you set yourself up to fail. And I don't want to see us fail as a community. This is not that big a time to wait. And in the meantime, we've heard we have a number of projects underway.
During the meeting, councillors also asked that staff share their current projects, stressing how the city is still pushing forward in reducing emissions, despite delaying the formal establishment of a new goal.
When we go through this recommendation, I think it's something, as Councillor Glenn said, it's something that we can achieve, and it gives us a direction, gives us a true measure of what we can do. And I think that's the responsible thing to do. So I want to thank staff for that and for the incredible work that we are doing. We can celebrate that. I don't think we need to hang our head low and say we have failed. We are accomplishing everything that we can do as a corporation and with incredible work that you're doing. So I don't just want to say that. I really mean it. And I think that this is something we can support and moving forward and seeing how we can achieve the absolute best that we can.
Thank you, Chris. Over to Chloe Weinstein with her piece from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about the federal government's decision to cap international student permits for the next 2 years.
The federal government is capping the number of international students' permits to approximately 360,000 in 2024. The government says that the cap will be implemented for 2 years. It will mark a decrease of 35% in international students' permits issued, and that number will be revised before 2025. Minister of Immigration, Refugees, and Citizenship Canada, Mark Miller, announced the changes on January 22nd. Miller noted that permits will be distributed based on population and that Ontario could see closer to 50% fewer visas issued. The city cited reasons such as the influx of international students causing added strain on already struggling services like housing and healthcare. Many institutions in Canada, especially colleges, have become increasingly reliant on international student fees, with administrators further emphasizing their importance in the face of a continued tuition freeze in Ontario. In 2022, international students made up nearly 50% of St. Lawrence's College's total enrollment. And in the face of massive cuts at Queen's, the university has pointed to increasing international student enrollment as a way to help address a projected budget deficit. Jaspreet Singh, Vice President of the World Sync Organization in Ontario, said that some of the changes are encouraging for the future education and prosperity of international students, but he feels when it comes to the housing crisis, they are being used as a scapegoat. Both Queen's University and St. Lawrence College expressed their concern over the decision in the statements released last week. Though both institutions will be impacted by this decision, universities are likely to feel much less of an impact by the changes than their college counterparts. In addition to the cap on permits, students who attend private colleges with curriculum licenses will no longer be eligible for post-graduation work permits, and with few, if any, domestic students attending these universities, they will be rendered obsolete. For St. Lawrence College, this means that they could potentially lose 3,500 students enrolled in their affiliate, Alpha College. Jaspreet Singh noted that there are mixed reactions from students or prospective students on the changes. For those in the country, the general consensus is that these changes are quote-unquote welcome steps to combat exploitation. But for prospective students, the cap severely limits their schooling options.
Thank you, Chloe. In our next story, Dr. Piotr Oglaza, the Medical Officer of Health for Kingston, Frontenac, Lennox, and Addington, provided an update on community health during the first Board of Health meeting of 2024. Oglaza noted that respiratory illness risk is still at a high level, but wastewater and hospital admissions point to a downward-turning trend. Oglaza explained that the KFLNA is still in a period of high risk according to wastewater percent positivity levels, but that respiratory-related emergency department visits and new admissions to hospitals are back to seasonal levels following a spike during the holidays. According to wastewater samples, COVID-19 activity is high and stable in the region, and the majority of cases locally are now the JN1 variant. Influenza activity outbreaks and hospitalizations are also at a high level, Oglaza reported, while RSV and other respiratory activity is low and stable. In terms of COVID-19 vaccination coverage, KFLNA is exceeding provincial averages, with 26% of KFLNA residents vaccinated this fall and winter versus 15% in all of Ontario. People 65 and over are at a 63% coverage level in the KFLNA versus 45% provincially. Oglaza attributed this achievement partially to the work of the community partners, particularly local pharmacies, who administered 70% of all doses in the region. Next on Oglaza's agenda was an update on the needle syringe program. He noted that all public health units are required to ensure access to harm reduction supplies through a coordinated program. Responsibility for the distribution of harm reduction supplies was originally contracted to the street health team, but on January 1st, 2023, the responsibility shifted back to the KFLNA Public Health. Oglaza reported that there has been an expansion of KFLNA Public Health's educational resources for safer drug use and that the transition was successful. Of note, KFLNA Public Health distributed over 320,000 needles over the course of 2023 and collected approximately 614,000 used needles. Oglaza also highlighted that the work of the dental health team in the administration of the fluoride varnish program. This program was created to combat the severe increase of childhood tooth decay in the region. Oglaza stated that growing this program was a priority for the board in 2024. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forstell of the Kingstonist for that story. Coming up in our next segment is Jesse Bell with a story by local journalism initiative reporter for the Morrisburg Leader, Philip Blancher, about how a total solar eclipse has changed the date for a PA day in South Dundas.
Thank you, Dinah. An astronomical event has prompted local school boards to reschedule a planned professional activity day in April. On April 8th, a rare total solar eclipse will occur, with the apex of the eclipse taking place in the skies over eastern Ontario. According to the Canadian Space Agency, a total solar eclipse is when the moon perfectly aligns between the Earth and Sun. When this alignment takes place, temporary darkness will sweep across parts of the country. The eclipse's path of totality, meaning the line it follows from start to finish, sweeps along the St. Lawrence River and Lake Ontario. This narrow 100 to 115 kilometer band of the eclipse occurs the same time as students are leaving from school for the day. Directly viewing an eclipse can cause permanent damage to a person's eyesight. Protective eyewear designed for safely viewing an eclipse is required. Regular sunglasses do not provide enough protection to prevent temporary or permanent eye damage. Both the Upper Canada District School Board and the Catholic District School Board of Eastern Ontario had professional activity, or PA days, scheduled for April 26th. The boards rescheduled the PA day to April 8th. This move is to ensure or lessen the risk that students are outside at the time of the eclipse and reduce potential risk of eye damage. The eclipse will be first seen in South Dundas at around 2:11 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and will reach its apex or totality at 3:24 p.m. The duration of the totality is estimated to last 2 minutes and 7 seconds. To safely view the eclipse, the Canadian Space Agency recommends using special viewing glasses that are ISO 12312-2 standard. Taking photos of the eclipse with your smartphone or digital camera may cause permanent damage to the sensors and is not recommended without specialized glass filters attached. The next total solar eclipse is not expected to be viewed in eastern Ontario until 2106.
Thank you, Jesse, and to Philip Blancher from the Morrisburg Leader for that story. We now move over to a report by Local Journalism Initiative reporter Ted Evans for CJAI-FM on Amherst Island about the future of the Amherst Island Ferry.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Loyalist Township Deputy Mayor Nathan Townend released a statement this week regarding the new ferry on Amherst Island. Townend noted while on the right path, it's not possible to predict an exact in-service date at this time. Townend noted the ongoing training that is necessary for crew members.
Basically, what remains are for staff to have actual sea time on the vessel. There's a certain amount of hours they have to have at sea. Wolf Island has been doing that in their operation all fall. So it takes time getting crew their hours at sea, their sea hours on the vessel, and that will take some time.
With this training, staff members will meet Transport Canada's requirements to work on the new ferry. The issue now is the limited availability for some of these courses. The MTO has promised $400,000 to Loyalist Township to assist with staffing resources necessary to operate the existing Amherst Island Ferry service. Onboard training for crew members is expected to begin early this year. The statement notes staff are required to acquire hours of sea time, both with and without passengers, on the ferry route before those with limited licenses can take their onboard exams. It's expected that gaining this necessary sea time will take staff members a few months. Townend notes how winter may impact this training timeline.
That's the nature of the weather conditions, and that's the same for our regular operation with the Frontenac too. Sometimes if the winds are too high, we have to tie up. So those are really the winter conditions that are in question here as to how that will affect the training. We'll just have to kind of wait and see. It's obviously not an optimal time, but at the same time, it's also effective to train in that harsher weather too. it depends on how you look at it, but in terms of timeline, it may or may not hold us up.
With a better understanding of the possible timeline and potential kinks along the way, Townend notes the training should begin soon.
I think it would be common sense for anybody to assume that once the Amherst Islander 2 is in operation, there will be kinks to work out, and it's basically those that are unpredictable at this point. But we're confident in the near future that we should be able to get it out to sea at least and get the crew training on it.
Townend noted without an exact date in place, keeping residents informed is a main priority for the township.
From my perspective and from Loyalist Township's perspective, we want to give residents accurate information and as accurate timelines as possible. So that's why we're kind of big right now on not giving a specific time, because there's still some variables at play. I think what's important for the public to know is that we're trying to get it in service as fast as we can, but that we're prioritizing making sure that when it is launched, that our crew are confident in operating it. And so we're just acknowledging to the public now that there's a bit more work to be done before we can get it in service. And we're working towards that as fast as we can, but in a safe and reasonable way.
Townend's statement also addressed the situation with the ramp, stating work on the Wolf Island Ferry ramp will be completed early this year, and the ramp they had borrowed from the new Amherst Island Ferry will be returned and used when the new ferry is in service. According to the statement, the MTO is also working on purchasing a new ramp from Damen Shipyards, the Dutch shipbuilding company that built both the new ferries for Wolf Island and Amherst Island. The new ramp will be a spare for both new vessels. Townend's statement noted that work on warranty upgrades and deficiencies has started and is expected to finish this year. He also added deficiency repairs may require the ferry being periodically out of service for work to be completed. Loyalist Township has a delegation with the Minister of Transportation at the Rural Ontario Municipal Association conference next week. Townend describes what the township will be asking for at the delegation.
There's two big asks. Basically, we are asking for an extension for the Frontenac 2, which is otherwise due for maintenance on the 7th of April. And so we're asking for an extension to the Frontenac 2 to give us more breathing room, basically, to get the Amherst Islander 2 in service. And the other ask is we're requesting the minister's support to appoint Helm, which is a marine services consultant that we're asking the ministry to appoint as a project manager, basically, to get the boat in service, to kind of project manage what remains to be done.
For CJAI and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you, Ted. And now over to Brenda Little and Craig Foster, the Local Journalism Initiative team at CJPE County FM in Picton, with a report on Prince Edward County Town Council's attempts to extend the service term of their fire trucks.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
At Prince Edward County Council meeting January 16th, it was learned that fire trucks have a shelf life of 20 years, regardless of the usage, condition, and kilometers on the odometer. Council is hoping to change that requirement, at the same time help other small and rural municipalities whose tax base is too low to replace fire trucks every 20 years. Councillors Nyman and Branderhorst presented Council with a resolution seeking support for the province to expand the lifespan of fire apparatus, but especially pertaining to the replacement of fire trucks due to insurance requirements. With no provincial funding available to replace fire trucks or equipment, a significant burden is placed on small or rural municipalities where the use of the equipment is different than in urban areas. Fire equipment is governed by industry best practices and applicable laws set by various governing bodies and industry partners. The Fire Underwriters Survey, FUS as it's known, is a national organization that focuses on community fire protection and fire prevention systems in Canada. It provides data, underwriting, as well as risk management and legal regulatory services. It is FUS that establishes the framework for replacement schedules of fire trucks and equipment. Council supported the resolution put forward by directing the Mayor of Prince Edward County, Steve Ferguson, to draft a letter to MPP Todd Smith requesting a meeting to discuss the lifespan of fire apparatus, to also draft a letter to FUS requesting the creation of a new community fire protection insurance system that does not put all municipalities under the same umbrella, and to create distinct categories for rural and urban municipalities. The resolution is to be sent to Premier Doug Ford, senior provincial cabinet ministers, 444 municipalities in Ontario, and all provincial and municipal associations. If changes can be made to the current insurance structure, the result could be a game changer for small and rural municipalities. For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little and Craig Foster of CJPE County FM for that story. Up next, we have CFWN Local Journalism Initiative reporter Jeff Gard's recent story about the addition of a fourth operating room to the Northumberland Hills Hospital.
Northumberland Hills Hospital will build and equip a fourth operating room thanks to a $2.5 million donation from the William B.G. Humphreys Radlett Foundation towards the Exceptional Community Exceptional Care campaign. Adding a fourth operating room was one of the key projects announced when the campaign was launched last spring, said NHH Foundation CEO Rhonda Cunningham.
When we publicly launched our campaign in May, we had $7 million more to raise to meet our $25 million objective. I cannot tell you how inspiring this donation from the Humphreys Estate and the Radlett Foundation means to our volunteers and to our hospital and its vision of providing the best care possible to our community. We're super excited, and we know this is going to make a huge difference to the patients of Northumberland County.
NHH says William Humphreys, who passed away in 2020, committed to improving the lives of others and anonymously supported many charities over the years. Upon his passing, Humphreys named three trustees to oversee the Radlett Foundation, which he established to continue his charitable endeavors. The three trustees coordinated the gift to the hospital. NHH President and CEO Susan Walsh said the development of the fourth operating room aligns with the hospital's strategic plan's first priority to bring care close to home. It also helps support a growing West Northumberland community. Dr. Andrew Stratford, Chief of Surgical Services, said the fourth operating room will increase local and regional surgical capacity and allow for a decrease in surgical wait times, adding it will also help the hospital attract and retain medical professionals and create the opportunity to explore bringing new surgical services to the area. Construction of the new operating room at NHH is expected to begin this year. There are no public updates at this time as to where the campaign stands, but Cunningham said more projects are planned to be completed this year.
Some of the projects that we're looking forward to coming up are the redevelopment of our pharmacy and also the redevelopment of our medical devices reprocessing department. That's the department that sterilizes all of the equipment used in surgeries. So naturally, if you're expanding your surgical capacity, you also need to be able to expand your ability to sterilize more equipment. So those are some of the projects that we're looking forward to in 2024. We're really creating a change within the existing footprint of the hospital at this time.
Reporting for Northumberland, 89.7 FM, I'm Jeff Gard.
And thank you to Jeff Gard of CFWN in Cobourg for that report. Now over to Jesse Bell with the CFRC Environment Canada Weather Report.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. Friday, February 2nd, temperatures will be peaking at 0 degrees Celsius and it will be sunny, dropping down to minus 10 overnight. Moving into the weekend of Saturday, February 3rd and Sunday, February 4th, during the day, conditions will remain steady at 1 degree and sunny, but we will see an overnight low of minus 10 on Sunday night. Monday, February 5th, a high of minus 1 and an overnight low of minus 11, but it will be sunny during the day. The run of sun continues into Tuesday, February 6th, but we will see a high of only minus 1. That wraps up the Environment Canada Weather Report. This is Jesse Bell signing off and throwing it over to Christina Laurie for CFRC's Community Events and Concert Calendar.
And now it's time for the CFRC Community Concerts and Events Calendar. Have an event you would like covered on our website and news programming? Contact us via cfrc.ca today. To start us off with events, on February 1st, the Horizon Art Installation opens in Springer Market Square. Get cozy in a beautifully constructed cocoon and keep your eyes on the sky as the rocking of the cocoon's chair triggers a magical series of lights and music inspired by the twinkling stars, soaring birds, and windswept trees. This illuminating light and sound experience is made to be enjoyed anytime during day and night for free, and will be available daily in the square until February 22nd. For further information, you can visit downtownkingston.ca/horizon. On February 2nd, the 25th annual Reel Out Queer Film Festival kicks off at the Screening Room. This festival will be showcasing over 90 films from 35 countries, as well as their exciting narratives and incredible shorts programs. This event will run from February 2nd to February 11th at the Screening Room. To view a list of showtimes and purchase tickets, you can visit Reel Out.com. On February 3rd, attention all undergraduate students passionate about neuroscience. Running from February 3rd to 4th, New Generation will be holding their annual neuroscience conference held at the School of Medicine building. This conference will explore a wide variety of topics within neuroscience, from mental health and neurodegenerative diseases to topics in artificial intelligence, neurosurgery, and neuroplasticity. The conference will start at 9 a.m. on February 3rd and end at 6 p.m. on February 4th. For more information, a detailed itinerary, and to purchase tickets, you can visit newgeneration.com. Also being held this weekend, February 3rd and 4th, is the Queen's Space Conference. This is an annual space conference centered around a series of exciting talks, innovative workshops, and networking opportunities. The conference will be held at Residence Inn Marriott from 9 a.m. on February 3rd to 5 p.m. on February 4th. For more information and to purchase day passes, you can visit qsconference.ca. On February 3rd, the Kingston Frontenac Public Library will be holding an all-ages winter carnival at the Salvation Army Church from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. This
event will have horse rides, a barbecue, and other community interactive activities. Finally, on February 4th and every following Sunday, Runner's Choice will be hosting a 40 to 90 minute weekly run group for all ages and all paces. This group will meet at 8:30 a.m. outside Runner's Choice for some easy miles. After reconvening at Runner's Choice, the group will head over for coffee and conversation at Coffee and Company. If you are joining this group for the first time, call Runner's Choice at 613-542-2410 or visit runnerschoicekingston.com. Now getting into our upcoming concerts, tonight on January 31st, $5 Dates will be performing covers of Mumford & Sons, Blue Rodeo, and Neil Young at Spearhead Brewery from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. for free. This is an all-ages event. Tomorrow on February 1st, head over to Musiki Cafe and Whiskey Bar at 8 p.m. to see Frank Ryan perform. This event is Pay What You Want by donation to the musicians. This is a 19-plus event. On February 2nd, rock out at the Mansion with a short walk to Pluto as they wrap up their first ever tour. They'll be joined by local groups Luscious and Kojak. The show, which is 19-plus, runs from 9 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. Purchase tickets for $15 at ticketscene.ca. That wraps up your community events calendar for tonight. Be sure to head to our website, cfrc.ca, for a full list of events.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and New Leaf Link. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter at CFRC. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time.
Did you know that New Leaf Link offers day programming for adults with developmental disabilities? We serve families in Kingston and South Frontenac. Our program focuses on arts, healthy living, and community connections, including summer camp. New Leaf Link's caring staff and talented instructors provide a place for everyone to learn together and build friendships. If you or someone you know would like to join our program, please visit newleaflink.ca for more details. Together, we can grow, connect, and belong.
Your true friend loves you just as you are.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.